Hey, big thanks to Bria Burton for editing this episode. Welcome to another episode of Strewn Along the Path, and I am Danny Rand. Yeah, I'm Danny Rand. Really, my name is Danny Rand. When I was a boy, I was flying over the Himalayas. Something went wrong with the plane. My parents were killed. I was left alone, the lone survivor on the side of the Himalaya Mountains. I was rescued by some monks who took me to a monastery in the hidden city of Kowloon and trained me to be the Iron Fist. I am Danny Rand. I've come back to claim my heritage, my name. I am Danny Rand. Well, okay, maybe I'm not. Maybe I am just Marshall Latham doing another podcast. So I'm doing this podcast talking about the latest Netflix Marvel show, The Iron Fist. And of course, I've been talking about these over the last several months. And this is more fresh in my mind because I just finished watching Iron Fist. And so like the other ones that I was doing, Jessica Jones and Luke Cage, I had watched, you know, several months beforehand before I started to talk about it, to record anything about it. So this one, I don't have to refresh myself as much on the material. So yes, we're going to talk about Iron Fist, and man, has this show gotten beat to crap by the critics. People hated this show, at least looking at the critics. People that there's a lot of fans online that I've seen that have enjoyed the show and talked about the show in a positive way. But if you just listen to the critics' reviews and heard what some people, I mean, you would think this is the worst thing since Batman v Superman or Howard the Duck. I mean, I haven't looked up the Rotten Tomatoes score for Howard the Duck. Last time I looked at Rotten Tomatoes score, which is, I guess, just a couple days ago for Iron Fist, it was like at 18%. That's really, really low for any movie or TV show, let alone something from Marvel. And just, the article titles that have come out about this show have been, you know, just so negative. And so it seems like, you know, Marvel has finally had something that, at least in the critics' eyes, has been a failure, has been a letdown. And so anyway, I thought I'd give my opinion of the show after having watched all 13 episodes. I was wrong last time when I said that Iron Fist and The Defenders were both going to be 8 episodes long. Iron Fist was 13 episodes long, just like its predecessors have been. And that was probably built into the contract, right? That was probably what was sold to Netflix or whatever, that each one of these characters would have a 13-episode arc leading up to The Defenders, which will be an 8-episode arc. And then we'll see what happens with other sequels, things like that. We've already had, well, not sequels, I guess, but additional seasons for the rest of these shows, like Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and things like that. So I guess it's time for me to give you my opinion. I have lots to say about this show, but it's going to be a little different than what I've talked about in the past, you know, with Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, and probably even when I talked about Daredevil. You know, I gave kind of a beat-by-beat or a story, you know, I went through the entire storyline talking about what I really liked and what you really should watch and all these things. And I'm not going to do that with this show. I don't have as much to say about the characters and about the different story beats because it wasn't as good as the other ones. In that way, the critics were correct. This is probably the weakest of the Netflix shows, probably the weakest of any of the television shows. I haven't watched Legion yet. I've heard good things about it, but I haven't seen it. And so I'm going to talk about that and what I thought should have been better about Iron Fist. But I'm also going to fight back against the critics a little bit. It's really not as bad as they say it is. It's not great. It's not as good as the rest of the shows. It's probably not even as good as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I'm not going to sit here and say it's the, you know, best, but it's much better than 18% on Rotten Tomatoes. I mean, come on, this isn't Ghost Rider Spirit of Vengeance. This is the Iron Fist. It's still better than a lot of other things out there. There are several things that I think why the critics are so harsh about this show. One of the things I think is that, you know, everybody, just like with Pixar, everybody's waiting for Marvel to fail. They're tired of hearing all the good things about Marvel, and they want to see Marvel have a stinker and not be so high and mighty. You know, to me, that's kind of sad to want something to fail. It makes for good stories. It makes for good article clickbait and that kind of thing. And so I think that's a little bit of it. Probably not a lot, but I'm sure everybody's waiting for that. And, you know, people have said that they failed with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and they're dead wrong about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. To me, that's a stellar show. That's a great show. I mean, just this last week, there was an episode titled What If? That they've been jacked into this virtual reality world called the Mainframe. And instead of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's the Agents of HYDRA, and all of them have different personalities. Some of them are in there to rescue the others, and there's just so many good beats to it, so many good elements, not just the evil version of the characters, but anyway, I'm getting way off track. But Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been a tremendous show, I think, since the beginning. Anyway, to get back to Iron Fist, I think the other thing going against this show was there was such a brouhaha, to use a odd word that I never use in casual conversation. There was a big stink about casting Iron Fist as another white dude, which I understand where those sensitivities are. You know, I know Asian American or even Asian actors in general have often historically been whitewashed in film and TV, or they've been stereotyped similar to, you know, African American actors or just simply African actors. There's that history there of their stories being whitewashed or whatever. So I understand that sensitivity and I understand where that's coming from. I would have had no problem if they would have decided to cast an Asian American actor or an Asian actor to be Danny Rand and go that way and change that up a little bit. I would have been fine with that. I think that would have been cool. They could have brought different elements into it. That would have been awesome. But they decided to stick to the comic book origin and keep him as a white dude. So I was fine with that as well, because that's where it was in the comic books. But I understand, you know, people wanting more representation of Asian actors. But they decided to go with Danny Rand as a white guy. And so that's fine. The other thing that I understand, I guess, about that is, you know, it is a trope going back to the pulps in the 30s of here we have this white guy, white Western guy going back to the East and learning about the martial arts and becoming the best, better than all the other people that were there, you know, coming back with this great power. You had it with, I believe even the Shadow had that. There was the Green Llama, I think, was there. Doctor Strange, you know, had that same thing happen with him. And Doctor Strange, I mean, there was a big brouhaha, to use that word again, about Doctor Strange, because the Ancient One was played by a white woman. Instead of historically in the comic books, the Ancient One was this ancient Asian man where Doctor Strange learned all of the mystic arts from. Very similar storylines here. Between, you know, we have the Iron Fist and Doctor Strange and all these pulp characters from the 30s and 40s that were better than the people that taught them. They became the masters of their craft because they were white or whatever that trope came from. So, again, I understand the sensitivity and I understand the desire to make that better. Doctor Strange with the Ancient One, I mean, they did cast a woman. They cast Tilda Swinton. She did a great job. She kind of has that otherworldly look to her that kind of transcends gender, transcends, well, not transcends race. I mean, she's obviously white, and I think she's from a Celtic background. They did bring that out in the movie, but I mean, it was kind of groundbreaking to change that role from the Ancient One being a man to the Ancient One being a woman. That wasn't enough. She wasn't an Asian woman, so that's not acceptable. So, you know, some of that I don't understand. You know, I think a lot of people like to just push agendas, and they're fighting for representation and things like that. And so everything gets, you know, super scrutinized and everything. But anyway, so I think there was some definitely some blowback from that in a lot of these critics' reviews. And so that's why it's been so rampantly beaten up, I think. But the critics also have a point. It's not a great series. It's not bad. I liked it quite a bit. But when you compare it with Daredevil, when you compare it with Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, I mean, it really doesn't stand up. But there's lots of reasons for that, I think. It seems to me that this show was really rushed in its production and preparation. It wasn't that long ago when we heard they didn't know what the heck they were going to do with Iron Fist. They didn't know what the show was going to be about. And then somebody came up, and I'll look this up later, but somebody came up with a good idea, their take on Iron Fist and Danny Rand and what they wanted to do with the show. And so they ran with it. And I don't think they had a lot of time to scrutinize the writing. You know, it was probably written up pretty quick and approved. Again, I can look this up. They typically have this kind of information on Wikipedia and stuff, if you can believe everything on Wikipedia. The biggest weakness of the show were the fight scenes. This is Danny Rand as the Iron Fist. He's Iron Fist. He's the living weapon. He is the master of Kung Fu. He beat out all these people that were training in Kunlun. Is it Kunlun? Kunlun? I like Kunlun, so I'm going to say that. He competed and fought and did everything to become the Iron Fist, the living weapon. So you would think that a show like this would have amazing fight scenes, amazing choreography, and it really didn't. I'm not saying it was terrible, but it was, it was disappointing. I don't think the actors were trained very well. I mean, you could see the choreography and not just, wow, that was a really good choreographed fight, but like you could see them, it was almost like they were practicing the scene rather than shooting the scene in some of these fight scenes. And some of these fight scenes were epic, or had the potential to be epic, and they really weren't. There was one episode that I thought was done pretty well, and again, spoilers here, but you should be used to that by now. I don't even remember what episode it was. It was toward the end. It was like episode 11, maybe? 10 or 11, where you had Colleen Wing, who is a character that befriends Danny Rand and helps him in his quest. Or, I don't know, what was his quest? That's another thing that we'll talk about. But anyway, she becomes friends and lovers with Danny Rand and fights with him throughout most of the show. And she's a really interesting character. But anyway, this episode had her fighting against her Sensei. Big spoilers here, so sorry. I warned you. Who she, loved and revered throughout her life, and then finds out that he's one of the bad guys. And so she fights him in the rain in this courtyard thing. And then as soon as that fight's over, Danny Rand ends up fighting his best friend, who was best friends with him on Kunlun, and is kind of jealous of Danny being the Iron Fist and doesn't think Danny is living up to his role as the Iron Fist as he should be. So they fight. I think those fight scenes were done really well. And it was one right after another, and they were filmed very well. And I believed that these individuals were fighting. And I thought that was done really well. That was one of the best fighting scenes throughout the whole show. And so I give them props for that episode. That was really good. But again, there's 13 of these episodes, and there's a lot of fighting throughout all these episodes. And the fighting wasn't compelling. It felt very choreographed. Of course it's choreographed, but it felt like they were learning it as they were filming. And I think that goes back to they didn't have time. So that is probably the biggest weakness of the show. There's one point where Danny challenges the hand. You know, that's the big thing. As the Iron Fist, his biggest thing is to destroy the hand. And so he goes to confront Madame Gao, who's back in this episode. And I think she's great. I liked her in Daredevil, even though she wasn't in it very much, because, of course, they were focusing on the Kingpin. But she's around. She's a lot bigger presence, of course, in this series. I really like Madame Gao and her presence as the menace of the hand kind of thing. But anyway, he goes to confront her, and they come up with this. She issues him a challenge to fight three of her best fighters or whatever. So Danny goes through this series of fights. He fights one guy, beats that person, and then he fights a woman. Anyway, he has to go through three different fighters to save the life of this girl that he's trying to save. I mean, this is the makings of great stuff, right? I mean, this is where Danny Rand can establish himself as the Iron Fist, as this formidable foe against the Hand. Because it's not as good as it could be, that doesn't really happen. He doesn't really establish that. Even though he wins the battle, he doesn't come off as being this great and all-powerful kung fu guy as the Iron Fist. And so, you know, a lot of people are putting the actor down. Finn Jones, who's cast as Iron Fist. You know, I don't know anything about how much he was trained or how much preparation he had for this. And so I'm not going to be somebody to put him down. But it just, that part of it, I was never sold that he was this great and powerful superhero. So there you go. So I'm going to get off of that and talk a little bit about the character of Danny Rand. But I think the writing was really, didn't help the show a lot either. You know, again, I think this was written really quickly. And, of course, you have to fill up 13 episodes, and so the pacing is slow. It starts out with Danny Rand coming back to New York. You don't really know anything about him. He's just there. His dad and this guy named Harold Meacham owned a company called Rand Enterprises, or Rand, the Rand Corporation. Of course, his dad died, and so Harold Meacham had taken over the company, and now his kids, who Danny Rand knew when he was a kid, have also taken over the company because Harold is thought to be dead. He's not, but he's thought to be dead. He comes back. He tries to get into the building. You know, you probably saw that in the preview. And, you know, nobody believes that he's Danny Rand, and he doesn't have any proof to prove who he is. But he's trying to convince everybody that he's Danny Rand, and there's legal battles, and as well as personal, you know, connections with Joy and Ward Meacham, who pretty much run the company at this point. They were intriguing characters. Joy and Ward Meacham were intriguing characters, but they just went back and forth so much, it was hard to really know who to like, who not to like. You know, Ward was set up, and how come it's always Ward that's the jerk, the bad guy, just like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? Anyway, so Ward was pretty bitter and dismissive of Danny. They show that he wasn't very nice to Danny when they were kids either. He was kind of a jerk back then. But Joy and Danny were pretty close. And so she's a little softer. She really wants to believe that it is Danny Rand. Some of that stuff was pretty interesting. That would come in and out. All of a sudden, that wasn't important to Danny anymore. After he got into the corporation and it became 51% shareholder or whatever, and that caused problems because his sensitivities were different than the Meachams and the boards. So that caused friction and problems and stuff. And some of that was interesting too. But just as you were kind of going down that road, then he finds out that the Hand has their hands in the Rand Corporation. Of course, he's the sworn enemy of the Hand. And so he kind of goes off in that direction, and that leads him, you know, a different way. And he never really, I don't know what I would have done. I haven't stopped and thought about what I would have done to make it better. But it was kind of uneven all the way through. Just whenever you started caring about something that was important to Danny, it wasn't important to Danny anymore. Something else was. At the beginning of the show, I kind of liked the fact that, you know, he kind of had this childlike innocence to him, that he was innocent to the things and sensitive to people's needs and things like that. And just, you know, would kind of have a goofy little laugh or a goofy grin. And, you know, you could just see the childlike nature of him. And I thought that was kind of neat. That was kind of cool, kind of endearing to that character. All of a sudden, he would just have these fits of anger and frustration. And just that just didn't come off very well. I mean, you know, I understand he's trying to figure out who he is in the world. Is he the Iron Fist? Does he live up to his destiny in Kunlun? Or is he this corporate guy, Danny Rand, that just never fit? Why was it so important for him to become part of the corporation again? Because you could tell he really didn't care about all that stuff. So why did he even leave Kunlun in the first place? That's never really explained. I would have liked to see more of him in Kunlun. I know I'm saying that wrong, but that's what I'm saying. And I guess the other part that I didn't like was that, again, I'm going into this, I haven't read any Iron Fist comic books. I don't know his history. I haven't read even a lot of Heroes for Hire stuff. You know, I know who he is. I've seen him in different representations. But I always got the idea that he was kind of a wisecracking, kind of more of a lighthearted character. You know, Luke Cage was more about, let's get the business done. More of a serious kind of guy. and that the Iron Fist, or Danny Rand, was more kind of a playful, happy guy. The tone of this show was similar to the tone of Daredevil and Jessica Jones. Probably more Daredevil, because Jessica Jones went in some pretty dark places, like I talked about last time. I don't know, I kind of thought, well, this will be kind of the more lighthearted show. Not a comedy, per se, but this is Danny Rand, but he is the Iron Fist, he is the Living Weapon, and he has this power, and he revels in it, and he's going to go foolhardy after the hand, he's going to be unbeatable, he might get knocked down a peg or two, and he might have to learn some humility, and I guess that's just kind of what I thought going into the show that this was going to be about. But it wasn't happy. It was very angsty throughout the entire show. And, you know, it almost felt like it should have been on the CW network, even though it was a lot more violent and stuff than anything that would be on the CW. But there's this part where Madame Gao, they have her captured. But, of course, she's, you know, saying all these things to get everybody upset, trying to get into their heads and stuff. But there's this one point where she's listening to Danny and Colleen Wing. They're talking about what they're going to do against the hand and stuff. And she just starts laughing. And she's like, you guys are children. You have no idea the world that you're stepping into. You have no idea what you're up against. And she's right. I felt myself agreeing with Madame Gao more in this show than I did with Danny Rand. Because Danny Rand was just all over the place. He didn't know what he stood for or why. Never really got that sense. And so, you know, I'd have to agree with Madame Gao. There's just these children playing in this big world. Colleen Wing, I think, was a little bit better off than Danny Rand. Her character felt more grounded, felt more real. And, of course, there's the big secret, again, spoilers, is that she is a member of the Hand. When we think of the Hand, we've just seen all these ninjas in Daredevil. We think of Madame Gao. There's fractions or whatever within the, not fractions, factions within the Hand as well. And so she's been raised up in this commune type place with her sensei, Bakuto. And he's an intriguing character as well. Kind of comes off as a pretty creepy guy. So I liked that part of it. I liked learning more about the Hand, Madame Gao, and this Bakuto. That Colleen Wing was part of the Hand, but she had such a different idea of what the Hand was. But she came to find out that it was just as evil as the rest of Hand. And that was kind of a neat thing for her to learn. So yeah, I really did enjoy Colleen Wing and her character in there. I think she did suffer, the character suffered a little bit from bad writing again. Some of her reactions to things were a little bit off. But I think Jessica Henwick, who was the actress that portrayed Colleen Wing, I think she did a really good job. She seemed really human, even though the character kind of called for her to be alone and standoffish and not wanting to get involved in anything at first. You could tell there was something underneath. There was more to her than what she was letting on, whether it was dealing with the students that she was teaching in her dojo or kind of relieving some of her tension by going out and fighting cage matches in the streets or whatever. You could tell that there was something more going on with her. And I thought her fight scenes, I think those came off a little bit better than Danny's. And I don't know if she's had prior training or whether they cut those scenes better, or they worked with her more, or she was more dedicated. I don't know. But her fight scenes, especially those cage matches, came off pretty well. You know, some people have complained about the number of cuts, that there were so many cuts during the fight scenes. I'd have to go back and watch those cage matches again to see if what they're saying is true, at least for Colleen Wing. I did notice the cut. I mean, I'm not a professional stunt person, or I don't know anything really about making movies or TV shows. I did notice that there were quite a few cuts in some of the Danny Rand fight scenes. I'd have to go back and look. But anyway, when it comes to the martial arts thing, that they didn't come off as well as they should, that's something that they can definitely work on if there's going to be a season two of Iron Fist. I hope that the onslaught of negative reviews and low ratings, well, I don't know what the ratings actually are for Iron Fist. I haven't heard that. I hope they do give Iron Fist another chance, another season to kind of prove itself. We'll see if that happens, because there were some really good character moments and some really intriguing characters, like the Bakuto, who was Colleen's sensei, that ended up being a bad guy from Hand. He was played by Ramon Rodriguez, and I thought he was an intriguing character. And even though he was defeated, actually looked like he was killed, not by Colleen, but by somebody else who I'm going to just talk about right now. His body did disappear. Members of the hand probably stole the body away. He's probably going to come back to life. So that would be interesting to see him again show up. Madame Gao is still around, so she should be around for those things. And that would be good to bring her back. I like her character, like I said earlier. There's another character that came up later in the series. He goes by the name, the actor's name is, I think, Sasha Dewan. If it's not Sasha, it's Sacha, but I think it's just Sasha Dewan. And he plays a character named Davos. And Davos is the character I was talking about earlier, who was the best friend of Danny Rand back in Kunlun. Kind of felt that it was his birthright to be the Iron Fist, and was kind of jealous that Danny earned that calling or rank or whatever you want to call it, that he became the Iron Fist rather than Davos. And they still remained friends. But of course, Davos felt entirely betrayed by Danny for leaving his post. I mean, the whole gig of being the Iron Fist is to guard against the enemies of Kunlun, to protect Kunlun from the Hand. Danny pretty much walked off, right? He left Kunlun, went back to New York to try to find himself or whatever, and left his post. And so I felt myself like I agreed with Madame Gao regarding everybody being such children and immature about everything and not understanding the bigger picture. I kind of found myself agreeing with Davos. You know, Danny, toward the beginning, he was describing, you know, what he had to do to become the Iron Fist, that he had to fight and train and sacrifice and put everything that he had into going through these tests and defeating others who wanted to be the Iron Fist, and that it took over his whole life, and he sacrificed so much to be the Iron Fist. Then it seems like, the way they portrayed it, he got restless, he got bored, waiting for somebody to come attack, got restless and just walked away once he noticed that the way to Kunlun was now open to the rest of the world, and instead of being there to protect it, he just took off. Spoilers, at the very last episode, he does go back to Kunlun to face up to what he had done, or to meet with his master, Davos, because Davos at one point left after he fought with Danny. He left and went back to Kunlun. And I think Davos is the son of Danny's master. He's probably the master of several of the people training on Kunlun. Anyway, Danny goes back at the end and finds that people are dead at the gateway to Kunlun, and just portrays that something really bad happened, that Kunlun may have been invaded. We don't know. I guess they're setting that up for the second season. That's something that I would be very interested in seeing, is him going to Kunlun, seeing the consequences, I guess, of his actions by leaving his post. I mean, he's very irresponsible to do that. If he was so disciplined to become the Iron Fist, why was he so irresponsible to leave his post? And so anyway, this character of Davos, I was compelled by him. I thought I was very interested in his character. And like I said, I kind of agreed with him. And I think in the comics, I don't know if I heard this or not, or if I'm just assuming, but I think that he is a character from the comics, and that he often fought Danny Rand because of the same thing, that he thought he should have been Iron Fist, that he was the true, rightful Iron Fist. And it was just interesting to see him interact with Danny. He was so frustrated with Danny because Danny was distracted by Colleen and the Meachums and all these things that were going on that had nothing to do with being the Iron Fist, other than that the Hand was involved and that the Iron Fist is the enemy of the Hand. There was an interesting dynamic. I mean, we don't know the true intentions of Kunlun either. You know, are they as good and righteous as we think they are? I'm guessing they are, because, you know, that's coming from the comics. But there's this whole discussion because, you know, when they find out that Colleen is a member of the Hand, even though she didn't realize what they were all about, you know, there's this friction, obvious, between her and Davos. Danny's kind of stuck in the middle. So there's a lot of intriguing ideas. The other idea that I'm not going to talk a lot about, even though it was an interesting thing, is that, oh, I can't remember the name. Anyway, the dad, the Meacham, who was partners with Danny Rand's father, he is actually alive. The Hand did something to him to make him be able to live forever, to come back to life. And he's been living secretly in this penthouse apartment, still kind of running things in the Rand Corporation through his son, Ward, who is the only one that knows that he's alive. And he's really an abusive father. He plays on people's emotions, and he's very, very much a vicious person. And it turns out that he is the one that was making the deal with the hand in the first place and had Danny's parents killed so that the deal would go through. That's an interesting thing. Ward actually ends up killing his father, and he's not altogether either. He kind of, the hand, I don't know if you remember from Daredevil, but Madame Gao was all about producing this heroin, and it had the little insignia from the dragon, like the burned figure on Danny's chest, but not the wings. Anyway, so they're trying to manufacture this heroin. He becomes addicted to it. Ward does. Ward Meacham. Anyway, so he's got his issues, and Joyce wants to help him, but is tired of what's going on with him. And there's this whole family dynamic between the Meachams that is interesting, but again, that comes and goes. You get little bits here and there, and it's kind of a slow development. But anyway, I said I didn't want to go too far into this. But anyway, you know, Ward ends up killing his father, stabs him, kills him, gets rid of the body. A couple episodes later, the dad comes back. He's an interesting character, but just kind of strange, kind of weird. I don't know how much of that was from the comics. I guess this is going back to the tone of the show. There were some scenes with the dad where he's killing people or whatever, where it just, again, started to go over the top. I mean, he had killed these two members of the hand. I think Danny was there to help him defeat these people from the hand that had come to kill him when they realized that he was double-crossing the hand or whatever. Or they were going to cut off his hand or something. Anyway, Ward comes up to the penthouse, and the dad is on the floor beating the faces of these guys with a hammer to get their teeth out so they can't be identified. And that's just unnecessary, gory, bloody, just to be gory, bloody. I don't like that. I think that's so... Did they think just because there was stuff like that in Daredevil, you know, some pretty vicious scenes in the other shows, they just had to keep that going? They had to have this bloody, gory scene with him with a hammer beaten in these faces. And there were some other instances of just totally unnecessary violence. Again, maybe it's just because I expected the show to be more of a lighthearted show with Danny Rand. But it also seems like, hey man, this is a Netflix show. We can do anything we want. We can be as violent as we want. And so we're going to be. Daredevil was so popular because Kingpin was so violent and all this stuff. And it wasn't about that. That wasn't why Daredevil was successful. Daredevil was successful because the characters were so three-dimensional. The characters were so vivid and real. It just seems like, you know, this is a wannabe. Oh, we got to put in some of this gore and some of this violence. Okay, he kills the guy. Ward has to get rid of the bodies. Blah, blah, blah. You know, these types of things. Just the fact of them happening doesn't bother me. But they have to go to the level of just being dark and gory just because they can. And I just, that was, it just kind of ruined that whole storyline for me. There's another scene with him where he kills his assistant because he's angry about everything that's going on with Ward and Joy, and finds an excuse to get mad and kills us. And he just keeps beating on him, and he keeps bashing his head in or whatever. I don't know. It doesn't have to be in there. That really soured me on that storyline, that part of it. Because there was none of that going on. You know, Madame Gao does kill somebody, you know, by sticking a knife or something through them. And there's people that are getting killed in the show, but it didn't seem unnecessary. But then they had to throw in these just, not wanton, that's really not the word I'm looking for. I don't know, I can't think of it. Just violence for the sake of violence, you know, unnecessarily. Just to be edgy, to live up to the gritty Netflix show, Marvel, what people expect from Netflix Marvel shows. You don't have to have the same show. You don't have to be Daredevil. Just because the Kingpin did it doesn't mean you have to do it. Just because Cottonmouth and Luke Cage was pushed off of a balcony and then, you know, had his head beat in by a microphone stand doesn't mean it fits in what's going on with Danny Rand. You don't have to put it in there just for the sake of doing it. Even the Luke Cage thing with, you know, Mariah killing Cottonmouth, that wasn't, I mean, yes, we saw her pick up the microphone stand and we saw what she was doing, but there was just a different vibe to it, a different feel. It just didn't seem thrown in for the sake of throwing it in. It seemed like part of the character or part of that scene because she was so vehement in that. And this guy was just, he was the evil because he was supposed to be evil. he got really tiresome after a while, and his whole manipulation of Ward and Joy. And here I am, I've probably gone on for way too long about something that I didn't really want to talk about. So throw it all up there and take what you can from it. So I was disappointed in the show. It definitely was the weakest Netflix show. They don't all have to be the same. They're in the same environment and they're all linked together, but they don't all have to have the same tone. You know, I thought they had done a good job of kind of differentiating these shows. You know, Iron Fist could have been so much more. When you hear Kung Fu, and they do mean Kung Fu, it's not just the generic Kung Fu, because there's a point where Davos is talking to Colleen Wing, or no, talking to Claire Temple, who, oh, I haven't talked about Claire. I'll talk about her in a minute. But anyway, she says something like, oh, is he the master of your karate club in the Himalayas? Because she, you know, she's kind of exasperated by everything. Why do you people have to be so dramatic and do all these stupid things? So she was talking to Davos and said something about the karate club in the Himalayas or something like that. And Davos corrects her. He says, no, it's not karate, it's kung fu. And so, I mean, it's very on purpose. And when just you hear that, you expect so much more out of the fight scenes. I guess when I think about Iron Fist now, I think this is the equivalent of the Elektra movie as far as the fight scenes go. Your buy-in on what's going on as far as the ninja stuff. Not completely. I mean, that's pretty low. Elektra is pretty bad. It's probably the worst Marvel movie that I've seen is the Elektra movie. I would say that Iron Fist is definitely better than that. And again, like I said, if they're going to go ahead and do a season two of Iron Fist, they could blow this one out of the water. They could totally redeem anything that they lost in season one. Maybe people won't come back for it, but if they do it right, if they promote it right, prove how much they've improved on the fight scenes and on the writing and the character building, then I think it could be something that's good. We'll see. If they do it, maybe they won't do it anymore, or if people buy into it. And I think if they use as a rule that they just do 8 episodes or 10 episodes rather than 13, it just seems like that 13, and I'd say this is true for every Netflix show, Daredevil both seasons, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage could have been tightened up quite a bit. They didn't have to go the 13 episodes. It did kind of slow the pace down a little bit too much in spots, and I'd say that for every Netflix Marvel show. So it's not just this show, but the problem is you're not invested as much in the characters, so you don't push through as easily through the 13 episodes. Overall, I enjoyed it, but definitely a lot less than the other ones. You know, it's cool to see anything. I mean, who would have thought 10 years ago? Let's see, is it 10? Yeah, I'd say 10 years ago. It's pre-Iron Man that you'd ever see any of these shows. I mean, when he talked about Daredevil, everybody makes fun of the Daredevil movie with Ben Affleck. It's a punchline, right? Well, now you talk about Daredevil, people are like, rock on, Charlie Cox, blah, 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 Kingpin, you know, all these people, everything that was mocked before is now rock solid. Nobody would have even dreamed of an Iron Fist being produced, and now here it is. It's not the best thing that it could have been. It could have been a lot better, but hey, it's here, right? And I think they can take that character and do a lot with it if people are willing to stick with it. I'd be interested to see what they do with him in Defenders, if they improve on things. I know they rolled right directly from Iron Fist into the production of the Defenders. And again, I think this was rushed. They needed to get Danny Rand established. They needed Iron Fist because they needed to get the Defenders on the air. And so I think they rushed production. I think they rushed everything to get Iron Fist on the air. They didn't have enough time to train everybody correctly to, I don't know what you call it, punch up the writing a little bit better. It's probably like a first, second draft of the script, and they just had to go with it to get into production. I don't know. It just seems that it was very rushed. I'm a fan of, things aren't going to work out very well. We need to take more time and finish this. If they would have announced that there was going to be a delay in the production, and they would have to delay Iron Fist and delay Defenders, I don't know if there would have been a big backlash from the fans. They would have said, yep, get it right. You need to get it right. Contractually, I don't know what was going on, if they had to meet a deadline with Netflix or they had to meet a deadline with Marvel or, you know, something for anything else that's going on in the movies or the other TV shows. I don't know. Don't know any of that information. But again, it just felt rushed. One of the things I was glad about with this show, I watched the preview for it. Not the quick little preview, but when they did a more extended preview. And I'm like, dude, this is Oliver Queen all over again. This is Bruce Wayne all over again, right? You got this heir to a company whose parents or parent have been killed. They've been away for a long time. They're coming back to take over their corporation, blah, blah, blah. I'm thinking, oh, hey, this is the first season of Arrow, right? This is Batman Begins. Now it's Iron Fist Begins. And there was that aspect to the show where he was trying to come back and be part of the company, but that wasn't the sole focus of the show. And that's a good thing, because that's kind of a retread of what we've seen before. You know, I mean, this the comic book character has, you know, the comics have these common type of things and common origin stories. You know, that's where these shows do have an opportunity to change that, to do things a little bit differently than they are in the comics. But I'm kind of glad this didn't feel like Arrow season one. There was quite a bit of a difference between, you know, what was going on in Iron Fist and Arrow and Batman Begins. Here we are. I've talked a lot longer about this movie or about this TV show than I expected to. So there you go. What did I miss? Oh, Claire. I got to talk about Claire Temple. She's been in all four of these shows. Rosario Dawson, she's awesome in all these shows. She's really good in Iron Fist. In some of the scenes and in some of the situations, I'm a little bit embarrassed for her, because, I mean, she's been with Daredevil in more ways than one, and she's been with, I guess not too much with Jessica, just a little. She's met Jessica Jones and had interactions with her, and she was very tight and close with Luke Cage. I mean, even in this series, she's getting letters from Luke Cage in prison. She says Sweet Christmas a couple times, which is pretty cool. That's kind of Luke Cage's catchphrase. So there were some nods there, and she's just a cool actress, and her all of her scenes are done really well. Kind of strange that she would allow herself to get mixed up with some of these things, but I enjoy every minute she's on the screen. I guess a couple other returning, or at least one other returning character, was Jerry Hogarth, who I guess we learned about and met in Jessica Jones. She was the lawyer that Jessica did jobs for, and she was in that love triangle with her wife and her secretary or whatever. I don't want to say despise, but I really did not like that character in Jessica Jones. She had a brief cameo, I guess, in Daredevil Season 2, where she was talking to Foggy Nelson about working for her firm, and that was fine. I did find in Iron Fist that I kind of enjoyed her character. I liked her character. She helped Danny when he was trying to prove his identity and become part of the Rand Corporation. And then when Danny was on the run from the DEA and the government toward the end, him and Colleen, she kind of met secretly with them and told them what their options were to prove his innocence, or what would happen if he gave himself up, those kinds of things. And I don't know, I liked her character in this. I found her enjoyable. You know, she was just set up in Jessica Jones to be so nasty and such a selfish person. And I'm sure she still is, or whatever. But she just seemed to be more likable here on Iron Fist. So anyway, that was one. I kind of expected to see maybe a cameo or something from Misty Knight from Luke Cage. But she never showed up, because in the comic books, Misty Knight and Colleen Wing are quite the pair, and I think they were even called the Daughters of the Dragon. And they had a comic book where they did stuff together, Private Eye stuff, similar to Luke Cage and Iron Fist, Power Man and Iron Fist. And it'd be kind of neat to see them team up. Maybe they'll get together in the Defenders series. But yeah, no Misty Knight in Iron Fist.
So there you have it. There's my discussion about Iron Fist. Take it or leave it. Agree or disagree. I hope if you agree or you disagree or you just want to tell me what you think, please, 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 please send me an email. journeyintopodcast@journeyinto.gmail.com. Call the voicemail line at 77JInto107. Comment on Facebook. Comment on Twitter. Whatever you'd like. I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to respond to your emails. I'd love to interact with the audience for this podcast. I have recorded an episode where I respond to the feedback that I have gotten. So I don't know if that's going to air before or after this comes out. Hopefully that'll generate some interest in interacting with things we're talking about, whether it's the Star Wars Delusions of Grandeur episodes, whether it's the Strewn Along the Path episodes, or our journeys that we go on together. I'd like to interact and hear more from other people. So feel free to do that. If you'd like to donate to the podcast, you could definitely buy a different microphone. Big and Resh always talk about their lapel mics, and it does sound like they're a little lot quieter on their solo podcasts than I am. And I'm just holding up my Zoom mic and talking with the car going. There's a lot of background noise, and the more I try to get some of that to be silent, the worse my voice sounds. But, you know, I'm trying to find a happy balance there. But if I had one of those lapel mics, it might be a lot quieter. If you'd like to support the podcast, help me out with that, you could go to PayPal and pay me that way. I've thought about doing a Patreon for this podcast for a long time now. It kind of makes me mad that Rish has already done it and the Dune Sea is probably going to do it, because I kind of wanted to be the first one to start that, because it always seems like I'm copying what Big and Rish are doing, either at the Dune Steve or their own podcasts. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. I probably should just set one up anyway, because I was going to do it a long time ago. But right now, all I have set up is the PayPal, and if you'd like to support me there, shout out to Donna Bernard, who's right now my one and only supporter on PayPal, and I appreciate your support. It's allowed me to get access to some of the stories that I've wanted to produce for the show and a couple other things. So, I appreciate your support on there.
Hey, this is Marshall coming in here at the end. Just to let you know to stick around after the end credits, I guess you could say, of the podcast. To hear some feedback from Bria Burton on the Netflix shows, and this episode in particular. I'm always asking for people to call into the voicemail line or to give me feedback on these episodes. And so Bria took the opportunity, since she was editing what I had said, to add her own words. So yeah, go ahead and listen to that after the theme here. And I guess I'll be back here sooner or later to find out what else has been strewn along the path. Bye-bye. Strewn Along the Path is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives License, which means share it, share it, and share it, but do not sell it and do not change it. Thank you.
Hey Marshall, this is Bria. I've been editing some of these Strewn Along the Path episodes for you, and when I heard you talk about wanting some more interaction, I just thought, well, why don't I just give my thoughts right here and hijack the end of this Strewn Along the Path with Iron Fist? Obviously, it's up to you whether you're going to allow this to be tacked on to the end, so we'll see if this shows up on the episode. For those who don't know who I am, my name's Bria. I help Marshall out sometimes on episodes. I've been a fan of the Journey Into podcast for a while. I'm a fan of the Dune Steve. That's probably all you need to know about me. I've watched all four shows, and I pretty much agree with everything that you talked about. The character development was very weak with Danny Rand. As much as the show was entertaining and you could follow what was happening to an extent, it was very difficult to know what Danny really wanted, and why. With the other characters, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Luke Cage, their motivations were pretty much clear the whole time. I personally thought Luke Cage was one of the better developed characters, with Daredevil and Jessica Jones pretty much a close second, but Danny was just so far behind all of them with how they did this character. And I haven't read the comics either, so I don't know beyond what this show demonstrated for him. that probably puts me at a disadvantage. But at the same time, yeah, they had me and other people that weren't reading the comics either. So they did what they did, and it didn't always work. And the fight scenes, like you said, were very much a staged feel that you noticed. It took you out of the storytelling. And I kept thinking, if he's the Iron Fist and he's supposed to be kind of this undefeatable guy, why is any of the fighting, there's no feel of stakes? Because you just assume he's supposed to win all these fights. And even times when you thought, okay, he seems to be really slacking on this particular fight, which didn't seem to make sense with the character. The Iron Fist character, I thought, just from what this show portrayed, was supposed to be just the best of the best. So some of the fights where he would struggle, it was odd and made for awkward viewing even. But I did like Colleen Wing and Davos and Claire and a lot of the side characters. You had a better picture of their motivations, even the Meachums. Yeah, the dad was kind of a weird overall character, and you assume he's not really, even though they cremated him, you assume he's probably not dead because they didn't actually cut off his head like Madame Gao told them to. So yeah, she was also a great villain. So there is potential, like you said, for season two. They could do better, and maybe they'll pay attention if there is so much criticism. I haven't actually looked at it, but we'll see what happens. And I am looking forward to the Defenders. All these characters, especially the first three, are really fascinating characters, so it'll be fun to see them get put together into whatever situation they get put into and how they interact together. I imagine Claire, they've got to have Claire in there, right? Because she's been in every one. Why wouldn't they? I assume she'll be there too. With all four of these shows, they did do the gritty, dark feel throughout. And like Marshall said, I agree, they could have done differently with Iron Fist. It's not like it was a requirement. They did set a precedent, but I think it could have been refreshing to have a little lighter tone with Danny Rand. For the other shows, it just seemed to fit very well with who the characters were, what they were dealing with. I think Luke Cage might actually be my favorite of all of them. They're all so good. Daredevil and Jessica Jones are very good as well. I think Luke Cage felt so authentic, in a sense, like his character. Not that Daredevil and Jessica Jones aren't. Or maybe it's just that he's a little bit more likable. Daredevil got less likable in the middle of season, was it two? There's been two seasons? I'm having a moment. There's the season with the Punisher, which I think is season two, right? If there's a third season, I'm sorry, messing that up. Frank Castle, the Punisher, is on trial, and Foggy and Karen are essentially on their own because Daredevil has basically left them high and dry. And so there's moments where you're just kind of irritated with him, and that Jessica Jones has kind of a personality that you can see why people get upset with her and get angry at her. But Luke Cage is just all around a bit more likable. And there's nothing wrong with having flawed characters either, well, especially being such well-done flawed characters. When it comes to Iron Fist, though, there's story mechanics and plot issues and characterization issues that make for part of the problem, not just that he's a flawed character. And I think he's flawed because he hasn't, unfortunately, been developed well enough in this first season. So, my few thoughts, my two cents. Again, didn't mean to hijack the episode for too long. Hopefully, other people will share their thoughts too. Bye, guys. I know you don't know who I am, but thanks for listening. See ya.